I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Jeff Y., San Diego.
Good Lord, you're right, there are a lot of people here. Also want to thank the guy who's recording this. He told me that the mic picks up everything. I thought, good, I'm glad I don't have gas. Towards me more?
Yes. No, it's fine right there. It picks up everything.
He's coming after you. It was interesting when we have a couple things in common with the speaker. I wrecked a lot of cars. That's it. I noticed a lot of people wearing these tags that say Jeff Y. Fan Club, and I don't know who talked you into that, but you don't have to live like this anymore. I'm just saying. Every time I come and I do this stuff and I get nervous. It's like, and she said it really well. It's like where, you know, you're trying, I want to help, you know, and the thought is that I would have an impact on every one of you. And it's probably not possible. The only impact I might be able to do is perhaps to put a smile on your face and maybe some laughter. And then I think about the new people, and I thought, God, you have no idea what I would do to try to help you. And the fact of the matter is, I don't have much more help I can give you all either. You know, for the newcomer, you know, there's nothing I can do to get you sober. There's nothing I can do to keep you sober. It's an inside job, and it's between you and God, and it's going to take an awful lot of work, and there's a lot of people here to help you. And I hope that you latch on to it. But most of all, I hope you have what it takes to get sober. And that's a gift we call the gift of desperation. And without that, I'm not sure you'll make it. So I guess what I'm hoping is you had an awful lot of pain. Because for me, it seems like pain is about the only motivator that seems to help people like me. And trust me, I endured some pain to get here. Before I get going here, I'm a member. My home group is La Mesa Men's. They don't know any better. It's an odd group. I apologize. A lot of meetings, they don't yell things out, guys, so, you know, kind of keep it to yourselves. And yes, they're ladies. Quit staring, okay? Long time ago, my sponsors said to me that service didn't count if it wasn't inconvenient. And so I want to remind you how damn inconvenient wearing a suit coming here to talk to you has been. I want all my AA points, you know? But on that same subject is that I would be remiss if I didn't mention those people that are of service that don't do it. I hear people say that we do this service and we do this because we want nothing in return. And let me be honest with you, that's a lie. Okay? We do it to stay sober, and we do it to try to be happy. And that's the goal in Alcoholics Anonymous, to be happy, joyous, and free. But for a guy like me, is that I'm married to someone who is of service, because without my wife, I'm not able to get dressed, I'm not able to comb my hair, I'm not able to brush my teeth, and she doesn't get any AA points. You know, she does it because she's kind and because she's willing to do that. And so before I get going, please give her a round of applause.
Thank you.
Well, she'll get uppity, you know. You know, I had to one up Larry, you know, doing that for this 10-year cake and mentioning the wife. Dang, they keep raising the bar on me. I was talking to one of the guys I sponsored the other day, and one of the things that's so important in Alcoholics Anonymous is helping others. That's what we do. It says in the book there that when nothing else is working, that we work with another alcoholic. And he was struggling because a couple of the guys that he had been working with had gone back out or had changed sponsors and weren't talking to him. And he was in a lot of pain, and he says, "Doesn't it hurt your feelings?" As if no one had left me before. And I had explained to him that the very first guy I sponsored, and I remember him asking me, and I remember what joy it brought to me, and I was so anxious to help him. And we did everything together, and he took his 30-day token, and on the 31st day, he went out and celebrated and got drunk. And I remember calling my sponsor, and I was in tears, because I thought, I had failed. And I called him, and I said, "Joe, I'm not a very good sponsor." And he said, "Why is that?" And I said, "Well, Kenny drank." And he says, "Yeah, but you said you weren't a very good sponsor. What did you do?" And I said, "Well, we read the book together, and I took him to meetings, and we hung out, and I took him places, and we talked, and I did everything I could do. You know, we started on the steps." And he says, "God, Jeff, you did it perfectly." And I said, "I did?" And he says, "Yeah, you didn't drink." They keep the bar low for me. But quite frankly, getting back to that with the new guys is that, the odds aren't real good, And so the best we can do is put our hands out there to try to help you. And we are here to help. I don't know when I became alcoholic. I mean, I hear alcohol is but a symptom, and I have plenty of symptoms, and my symptoms started showing up right around kindergarten. And I can remember the very first day of kindergarten that I went up and they were riding these little trikes around, and I thought someone should come up and ask me if I wanted to ride one, and they didn't, and it kind of pissed me off. And so I went into class, and they were playing with some toys, but none of them were really as good as the ones I had at home. And so I just watched them. And I watched this little boy build this really neat castle out of blocks. And then at the end, the teacher said we had to all clean up. And I didn't really think I should have to because I didn't make a mess. And then she said I had to, too. So I thought, oh, what the hell. So I went over and kicked that boy's castle down. And so I had to stay after school the very first day of kindergarten. And that happened to be the day we were moving, and I guess the parents got it wrong that I guess they thought it was an hour later to pick me up. So when I got to the crossing guard, my parents weren't there to get me, and I kind of thought that they had found out and they weren't coming back, And I told the crossing guard that, and I think he had some concern. And I need to tell you, nothing changed throughout school from there. No scholarships coming my way. High school graduation was kind of a game time, decision. It was like, "My mom said, 'You're graduating?'" And thinking, "I think so. Yeah, I think so. We're looking good, Mom." So my parents divorced when I was about 9 or 10, and my dad ended up taking jobs overseas, so every summer I would get to go see him over in a different country, and I can remember about 14, 15 years old, we were in Istanbul, Turkey, and we were walking by a club, and the people said, "Come on, free drinks," and all we had to do, "We want to take your picture." And so my brother and I were like, "Hey, this is cool." So we went in and they took our picture and we got pretty hammered. And we went back home and we went to the movie theater about 2 weeks later. And they would have American movies but with Turkish subcaption underneath. And in between movies, they would have local commercials. And when the commercials came on, there was that restaurant. And there was us. And I could feel my dad staring, but I didn't look over. You know what I mean? You know, just another proud moment. You know, they said I could be anything I wanted to do, and I chose to be a disappointment. I'll tell you, I have the drunk stories to go beyond. I can just tell you, I never drank to feel it. I like to go way beyond feeling it. You know what I mean? I like to get really drunk. And a really successful Saturday usually meant that you kind of went down hard and early on Friday. But if you go down hard and early on a Friday, you're liable to get drunk three times on a Saturday. And there's nothing better than three times on a Saturday. It's tough to keep relationships, but, you know, you work through it. I remember during my successes that my dad thought that it was, I had decided to quit my job. I was having an attendance problem. And I remember that the boss of mine, he was a very kind man, and he kept trying to find excuses for me. And he said, "Jeff, you know, gosh, you keep missing, you're late. You know, would you please just call? Please just call." And I feel so bad for this man. He tried so hard. And he probably tried too hard, to be honest with you. Probably the best thing he could have done for me is fired me long before. A lot of people should have done that a long time before, let me get to my bottom a lot quicker. But this was just a kind-hearted man. And I remember going, man, I'm not going to let him down. And it was about a week later, and I got drunk. And I got so drunk, I slept through the shift. And I thought, passed out through the whole shift. And I wake up the next morning, and I thought, damn, he said to call. So I called, and I said, "Tell Jerry I won't be in last night." He didn't say before or after. He said call. So that pretty much ended that career there. And I had decided that probably drinking was probably going to be a way of my life. And so I decided I was going to move down to the river and maybe work like as a dishwasher the rest of my life so that I could just drink. You know, like come to, do the dishes, and go back and drink. And by the way, if you have a plan and it's somewhere near that, it ain't going to work probably real well. But alcoholics always have a plan. You notice that? You know? The guy's new, and it's like you can see in his eyes. You got a plan, don't you? Yeah, I bet you do. So my dad thought it was a good idea if maybe I moved into his house and that maybe to get my act together a little bit. And so I remember it wasn't bad. Sometimes my stepmom would vacuum and it hit my door. And it was kind of irritating at about 11 o'clock, you know. But it was, you know, it was free rent and the meals were good. So I mean, I didn't complain or nothing. But I remember the one day my dad said, "You know, how you doing?" And I said, "You know, not so good, Dad. You know, it's like one of those days, you know, that you just feel like killing yourself." And he went, "No." And I learned at that moment that's not something I guess you say. And so I never said it again, okay? Because I was pretty sure with his look that anything I said right after there, there was a good chance I was going for a ride, you know, and there wasn't going to be any doors on my side, you know. And I need to tell you, it wasn't until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was all of a sudden I heard someone sharing. It was one of those days that they just felt like killing themselves, and I heard everyone laugh. And I thought, I just might have found my home. You know? Finally, some people that don't go, what? You know? You what? You know? So anyway, one day I was sitting at my dad's house, and he had said that he was having someone come over, and he wanted us to clean up, like bathe and everything. And so my brother and I ate dinner with this man, and he offered me a job back in South Carolina. And he said, anytime you want a job, you can come back there. And I was like, you know, finally someone recognized how brilliant I was. I'm sure my dad had nothing to do with it. They were probably looking for like a really drugged out young alcoholic with a lot of problems. Thinking, boy, this will benefit our company. So I moved back to South Carolina, and before I left, you know, some of the problems that I had is that I loved to drink, but I also found that a lot of the stimulants helped me drink like faster and longer. And sometimes with the right mixture, yes, an amateur, I like to mess a little bit with some other drugs and just trying to get the right dosages at times, which sometimes just consisted of, what was that? So when I got back to, you know, before I'd left, one of the hobbies I had was this roommate who had a similar problem as me. We would do what we call window duty. You know, and that's where you peek out the window, you know, and you know someone's out there, but you haven't caught them just yet. And sometimes if you've been up several days, you can hear them. And luckily for me, is my roommate who had similar hobbies was able to take over the window duty at times so that I was able to get a little bit of rest. We lived in a pretty middle-class neighborhood, and we would still be going pretty hard in the mornings, and we'd go out on the porch and stretch like we were getting ready to go to work like other people, you know. I tried so hard to be like normal people. I went back to South Carolina, and I thought I'd get it all back together there. I go back there, and I had a job, and I did pretty good. And I didn't drink the first couple of weeks, and I thought, you know, it was probably those people I was hanging out with, you know. Probably no surprise to you, but it was quite a surprise to me that it wasn't long after that I was, you know, just drinking just as hard and just the same way I was doing before. Wow, I almost forgot where I was going. I was talking to Martha earlier, and I told her, you know, I have this dream sometimes that I'm going to be up here and I'll forget where I'm at or where I'm going or what I'm doing, you know. And it happened just then, but I wasn't sure, you know. See, back in 1977, I ate some acid. And I thought it was bunk, but I might have just come on to it, you know what I mean? I just thought, if you came here for a spiritual message, I am so sorry. I'm just bringing what I got tonight, okay? I was thinking last night, it's like I wake up in the middle of the night and you go, holy cow, I didn't even practice, you know? And you go, oh yeah, you're not supposed to practice, you know? And you go, yeah, but there's going to be a lot of people there. I mean, I really would rather not suck, you know? So instead of really getting this thing together, I just kind of rolled over all night long and tossed and turned. So anyway, I always give there's three talks we always give. That's the talk you want to give, the talk you give, and the talk you wish you'd given. Happens every time. The first talk was going to be incredible. So inspirational. I'm so sorry you missed it. Anyway, so I'm in South Carolina, which, by the way, is a long ways from home, and it isn't any better. And I was there about 3 years, and I found out my little sister was dying of cancer. And I thought, you know, for once in my life, I'm going to go back, I'm going to be there for her, and I'm going to see if I can help. And so I moved back to California, and within about 3 weeks, I was in jail for, I love to drink and drive, and you would too if, you know, it's not like I could walk. And, okay, no handicap jokes, okay? I wasn't in the wheelchair yet, okay? Give me a little bit of room here, okay? You know, I can't, what? Someone's like, oh, well, he's not allowed to say that. But anyway, so here I am. I'm in jail, and my little sister, who's dying of cancer, and she's trying to support me through this thing, and they're all pretty worried about me and my drinking. And, I called up this guy who had come by my house a couple years before I had left, you know, to South Carolina. He had come by one morning. It was a Sunday morning at about 11 o'clock, 10:30. And he came over and he knocks on my door. And good thing I hadn't gone to bed yet. And he had said, hey, Jeff, how'd you like to go to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting? And I'm thinking, what? I mean, because when you come in, I had like a man-sized bottle of vodka, you know, a man-sized bottle of Kahlua. I had enough amphetamine to supply, you know, the neighborhood for 2 weeks, you know, and it was all piled on my coffee table. It wasn't like I was hiding it from him. And I was thinking, no. Well, that's got to be tough not watching her. I'm going to tell you that right now. Anyway, so here I am. I'm back in California. I've got some legal problems now. And so I called him up, and I said, that I'd gotten another DUI, and I wanted to talk to him. And he said, well, come on up. So I went over to his house, and we started talking, and it got really awkward. He started getting really, like, honest. And he was like, you know, like welcoming, like I'd become a part of this club or something. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Yeah, I didn't come here to quit drinking. I kind of came here to see if you would go to court and tell him that. If you would just go to court and tell them that I had quit drinking would really be helpful. And it got really uncomfortable because then he got, it was like this change, man. He went from Mr. Compassion to, we don't even need you around there. Those people are my friends. They saved my life. I just as soon go tell the courts that instead of dragging your lion ass in there. And you're thinking, I mean, I thought to him, you don't own AA. I mean, if I wanted to go to a meeting, I could go to a meeting if I want to. So the next day, we were supposed to go to a meeting. And so thing was is that I'd had a night to think about it. And so he called and said, we're going to meet. And I said, well, the more I think about it, I could use probably an attorney a little more than I could probably use an AA meeting. And he said, it's your lucky day. One of the guys that has dinner with us before the meeting is an attorney. And I thought, God, isn't this great? Oh, I wished I had said a good attorney. Anyway, sorry. Anyway, so I go and I'm on my way to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I go to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think it's great for you guys. You weren't very hip anyway. And we got through it okay. The only thing was is at one point it got really uncomfortable at the end is that they held hands. And it was a little foreign to me. A lot of times we didn't like do a couple of lines and hold hands and do the Lord's Prayer. You know, so anyway, we're holding hands. And I thought, I don't know why I'm really doing this, but luckily it's not in the same town I live in. And then they did the Lord's Prayer, and I knew that wasn't going to probably work. And so I went home and I thought, I don't think this is going to be for me, you know. So Joe was, he would keep calling me, and he'd be, hey, you want to try another meeting? I'd be like, you know, okay, I mean, I got to go to court pretty soon anyway. So I'd keep going to these meetings, and at the end of the meetings, I would go hide in the bathroom so that I didn't have to do the Lord's Prayer, and so I didn't have to hold hands. I came kind of late to the meeting because I really didn't appreciate you hugging me. There was a couple of really large guys that I told not to hug me that did it anyway, but there wasn't a lot I could do about it. I'm angry only goes so far, you know. And then I heard something at a meeting when they had talked about if their hats were off, if you could drink like a gentleman. And I thought, I'd never tried that. You know, never once did I go, wow, I think I'll have a cocktail. You know, I was like, wow, smell the bouquet in this. It's like, you know, so I thought, I'm going to drink like a gentleman. And so this experiment worked incredible. 2 beers a day. It was just a remarkable deal for me. I think it took 10 days. And I remember forgetting to count. And that's key. That's key on this. It's key on the 2-beer rule. And so here I am at a party and I'm drunk and I heard some guy say, look at him. And he just got another 502. And it kind of pissed me off. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go drink alone. You know, I'd rather do that anyway. So I go to the bar so I can drink as much as I want and as fast as I want and drink the way I like to drink so that no one will bug me. And it was about 20 to 2 in the morning. Oh, my God, I haven't gone to see my little sister in a while. You know, she was dying of cancer, by the way. So I thought I should probably run by and see her. And luckily, there was enough time to get by the liquor store. So I went and bought lots of liquor so we could have a party when I got there. And when I got to the door, I dropped one of the bottles and it crashed all over the... But I was like, she looked really mad. And I was like, don't worry, there's more. You know? You know, don't you worry about a thing, little darling. And so I went in and then she said, where are my keys? And so she took my keys and then she said it was time to lay down and go to sleep. And I didn't really want to go to sleep because, by the way, I just brought a whole bunch of alcohol and I usually don't go to sleep until it's gone. It's kind of a rule that I live by. Even if it takes days and weeks, you know, it's not just a job, it's an adventure. So then her boyfriend, I'm not being nice to her, and her boyfriend stood up and started to say something. I remember saying to him, you know what, that's my little sister, and I'll take it from her, but I'd just soon kill you. You know, and I think he knew I was crazy and kind of backed down a little bit, and I called a friend and woke him up in the middle of the night to come get me, and took me home and went back home, and I got my keys from the car. I called a cab and I went back and got my car, because I don't know about you, but people don't tell me what to do, especially when I'm drinking, by God. You know, I had no regard for anybody, you know. And so the next morning I woke up and I didn't realize that at one of the meetings that I'd heard something and I hadn't meant to hear it. And that was when you'd apologize for the same thing to the same people so many times that it didn't mean anything anymore, that you needed to change the behavior. And so I didn't call my little sister that day and apologize. I didn't drink that day. I need to tell you, that's the last time I've had a drink. That's a long time ago. But before you get all teary-eyed and stuff, I had this other thing going on that you guys weren't that cool, so I was just snorting outside issues socially and coming to meetings. And so I came to a meeting one, and like I was still doing, coming just before the meeting started, so that no one hugged me. And I would leave, you know, go hang out in the bathroom. And anyway, I came up late to the meeting, and the guy came over, and he hands me something to read. And I thought, damn, I thought I'd successfully avoided this. And so I went up and I read, and as I came off the podium, he said, "Hey, Jeff, it gets better when you quit doing drugs." Oh, yeah. Yeah, funny guy. So everybody's funny. So I go back and I sit down and I start thinking, how's he know? And paranoia is one of my hobbies, you know. So, and I'm thinking, does everyone know? These people are playing me. You know what I mean? They all know. I knew I hated them. You know? But I thought, wow, I got to learn that trick. I mean, that's cool that they know this. And so I, you know, I haven't had anything since that day. You know, and that's, I'll be celebrating my birthday in May. That'll be 34 years. So, you know, so anyway, I told you that my sponsor is the guy that had come by all those years before. And finally, I got up the courage to ask him. I said, you know, that day you came by and asked if I wanted to go to an AA meeting, you know, why did you come by? And he said, well, I kept going to this meeting. I'd go by your house every day, and I noticed your furniture out on the front lawn. And the grass kept growing higher and higher. You know, we'd had a party there one night, and, you know, you get busy. And so, anyway, I guess I was one of the last to find out that I was alcoholic, you know. It seems like a whole lot of people around me did, you know. A whole lot of people worried. I sometimes in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was early new, and I would think, well, I didn't hurt that many people, you know. It was really just me. And then, you know, what happens is that along the way, you know, someone important in your life might have a drinking problem. And for us, it was our stepson. And you worry. You know, you're thinking, man, I hope he's okay. You know, I hope he makes it home safe. You know, I hope he doesn't hurt anybody else. And I start thinking about my folks and those people around me that go, you know, God, I hope he's okay. I hope he doesn't hurt anyone else. And what's interesting is that newly in recovery, you know, my dad had been really good to me through the years, but he'd lived overseas. And most every time I needed help, he would always send me money. And I had told my little sister not to tell my dad that I'd gotten thrown in jail again. And she ratted me out. She always ratted me out. That's what little sisters do. Anyway. So I did need a couple of bucks. I needed like $75 to stay out of jail. And I need to tell you, if you're here and you're new, and you're coming to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping that you can scrape together a couple bucks from these people, this is the tightest group you'll ever meet. Ain't worth your time. Yeah. You can, they'll hook you up for meals and stuff, but you ain't getting no cash. So I was going to call him up and tell him how good I was doing and all that. And he was in Venezuela, I think. And I called and I said, "Hey, Dad, you know, I just want to call and see how you were doing." And he took the aggression right away on me. And he said, "You know, Jeff, I heard you got thrown in jail." And I said, "Yeah." And before I could do the "yeah, but," he said, "You know, Jeff, I'm really sorry, but I'm not going to help you this time." And he said, "You know, I don't know what it's going to take for you, and I would do anything to help you, but, you know, if it takes jail for you not to kill yourself or kill somebody else, maybe that's what you got to do, and I just can't do it this time." And I've never heard my dad cry before, but I think I could hear tears in his eyes, and I could hear it in his voice. And it was like, when I hung up that phone, I said, "No, Dad, I wasn't calling for money. I was lying, but..." I said, "I just wanted you to know I was okay. And I've been sober, you know, I've been sober a couple of weeks now." And he said, "Well, you know, good luck." And I need to tell you, when I hung up that phone, I don't know that I've ever felt more loved in my life than that call to say, "No, I'm not sending you money this time." You know, what I heard is someone gave a damn. You know, someone gave a damn enough to tell me no. You know, "No, not this time, Jeff. Jeff, you need help, go get it." And thank God I found Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have, like Chris always says, lived life beyond my wildest dreams. Actually, he always says that he hates that line, so we attribute that line to him. In Alcoholics Anonymous, you know that we continue, we work these steps, we read the book, and we work with others, you know. And a little while ago, I was talking to someone, the guys, we have a little meeting on Wednesday nights, and we read the book, and we talk about things. And I a while back, I had asked the guys if they wanted me to wish you well, and they said yes. The vote was 7-6, so it was a tight vote, but they wish you well. Anyway, the what they were talking is wow, so nice to just hear the quiet. You know what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me is this opportunity to be of service. And for a while there, I think all of us in the beginning, and you see some of the people that don't seem to have to go to as many meetings, or they don't seem to have to do as much work as you're doing at Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get kind of ticked off about it. And you're thinking, how come I got to do this stuff? How come they don't have to? And after a while, you start wondering, I wonder if that's because I'm jealous that they don't have to. And what happened to me is that all of a sudden that I got past that. It has nothing to do with that. I do all the things that I do in Alcoholics Anonymous because I want to. And the reason that I want to is that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a purpose that I had never had before in my life. I had led a purposeless life. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have a purpose. And my purpose is to help the other alcoholic who still suffers. And that alcoholic just might be the guy with 25 years sitting next to you. The sad thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that if you ask that alcoholic how he's doing, there is the same answer every time you ask him or her. "I'm fine." And the sad thing is a lot of times their asses are falling off. And that's one of the reasons why we continue to shake hands. That's one of the reasons why we continue to go to meetings. That's why when we're in the same seat each time, That's why we continue to do these things. This is so that there's a familiar face, that if your ass is falling off, you have someone that you're close enough to come to and say, my ass is falling off, help. And I don't know about you, but that's one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life, is to come and ask for help. To come and say, I can't do this anymore. You know, a lot of people talk about this and they say that they came to Alcoholics Anonymous because they were afraid they were going to die. I need to tell you, that was never a fear of mine. Death would have been a relief. My fear is that I was going to live. And I was going to live like that for a long, freaking miserable life. And it was going to seem endless. And I don't ever want to go back to that. I don't ever want to go back to those days where I thought to myself, Dad, it's one of those days you just feel like killing yourself, you know? I don't ever want to do that again. What I would much rather do is I would much rather come here. I'd much rather see your smiling faces. I'd much rather go to my Friday night men's meeting where we laugh and we play and we have some close friendships. And I sponsor guys. And the nice thing is that nowadays a conversation can end sometimes with, I love you too. It's a long ways from where I came, you know? I would be remiss if I didn't say hello to Yoga Boy. You know, La Mesa Men's, we exploit whenever possible, and I won't tell the story. He's read enough. But, you know, it is so neat when we get a guy, when we get a guy who's new and he seems to be doing the work and wanting what we have, and that the guys embrace him and that they feel a part of. And that's kind of where I see my friend here. And the other day he called and he had left a message, and I was playing my messages back. And he said, he leaves his message and he says his name and then he says, Yoga Boy. And my wife was walking by, and she stopped. And she said, did he say Yoga Boy? I said yes, and she said, you had a part in that, didn't you? Yeah. 2 minutes. Well, you know, the time sure flies by. I was talking a little bit earlier and I had said, you know, we were talking about how nervous we get when we come do this. And I hope it's for the right reasons. I hope that the reason that I am nervous is because I do care. I really care. I really care about each one of you getting this thing. I really do care about you holding on to this thing. And I really do care and hope that you get what I have gotten out of this thing also, you know? And besides those things that we're talking about on the inside, you know, it's like to be blessed with a wonderful wife and with a neat family. And it's like adult supervision tonight. My wife bought her friend, you know? It's like, you know, No cuss words tonight. Anyway, when I was a year sober, I wrote a poem. That's going to cheer you up, huh? Yeah. Everyone's going, oh, good. Love those newcomer poems. And that's usually a big hit at La Mesa Men's. Yeah. It's a very gentle group. But when I was new, I'd said to myself, to show my gratitude, I'd write a poem every year. I told you I'm just about to celebrate 34 years, and well, I haven't. I just wrote that one. I came to you troubled, and hurting deep inside, not giving you much to work with, and wanting a free ride. You took me in anyway, showing me the way, not living for tomorrow, but living just today. I am no saint. My fortunes aren't just yet. But thank you for some sanity. For that, I am in debt. Thank all of you.